News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packard. More than 40 people killed, including children, after catastrophic and deadly flash flooding in central Texas. Many of them camping near the Guadalupe River when the flash flood came. A disaster declaration expanding in the state. The number of missing still unclear.
Those still missing include over two dozen young girls from Camp Mystic. The beds in the cabins completely upended. This area got more than a foot of rain in a matter of hours, swelling the Guadalupe River, sending floodwaters streaming into neighborhoods and communities, overwhelming campgrounds.
ABC's Maria Villarreal. Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei today made his first public appearance since the 12-day war between Israel and Iran began. The 86-year-old had spent the war in a bunker as threats to his life escalated. Bags of garbage piling up in Philadelphia. City workers demanding higher wages continue their days-old strike over this holiday weekend. This is ABC News. During 4th of July festivities, President Trump celebrating a major victory, the president signing his budget bill with a $170 billion investment in immigration enforcement Friday. ABC's Selena Wang on the ongoing questions about certain ICE raids.
We got to work with the farmers.
The president acknowledging the hardships for farmers who employ a large percentage of undocumented workers, floating the idea for allowing those migrants to stay in the U.S.
We don't want to do it where we take all of the workers off the farms.
Those immigration raids are putting cities across America on edge, especially in Los Angeles, where some of those July 4th celebrations were canceled. Fear is keeping many undocumented migrants inside, skipping school, work, even family gatherings, afraid of being swept up and detained.
The entertainment world remembering Julian McMahon. You may remember played Dr. Doom in the Fantastic Four movies. His wife telling Deadline that her husband passed away after a private battle with cancer. He was 56. Dave Packer, ABC News.
School sports are played by humans, coached by humans, and officiated by humans. So the next time you're sitting in the stands at a school athletic event, please remember this and maintain your humanity, especially when it comes to judging and critiquing athletes, coaches, and officials. Please show your fellow humans some respect. They'll appreciate your empathy.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Madam Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway from the fabulous city of Madison.
A lot of people say, I don't like politics. It's all dirty and angry and blah, blah, blah. It's really about caring about your community, finding a way to, like, bring it back to people talking to each other.
Yeah.
About what is important in our place and how do we take care of each other and use the levers of government to do that. That's really what it's about.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
The Brewers in Miami. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers and the Marlins going at it this afternoon in South Florida, where it's hot, humid, and in the 90s. Last night, the Brewers held on to beat the Marlins 6-5, thanks to closer Trevor McGill getting his 19th save of the season. Pat Murphy asked, why did he decide to keep McGill in the game despite two men on and the Marlins slugger Otto Lopez at the plate?
I know I'm looking at the clock, and what time was it? I looked at the clock, and it was like 9:48, and I'm like, Milwaukee's an hour behind, and when my kid's going to go to bed, so I got to be able to FaceTime to go to bed. So that was one thing I was thinking. The other thing I was thinking of is just how proud I am of McGill. Just every big situation, he's just a great competitor, you know, and keeps coming at you. Close call, whatever, it doesn't affect him. It's just, he's been sensational. That's what I was thinking about. When my kids are going to go to sleep so I can FaceTime them, and then that. What else was I thinking about? Like all the things I was thinking about? I mean, I had a lot of things on my mind.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight with scattered showers and thunderstorms and lows in the upper 60s. Mostly sunny for tomorrow. Beautiful. Less humid and a high in the low 80s. More sunshine for Monday, then a little more humidity Monday night and Tuesday with some storms possible. Right now it's 73.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Matt Nair on air.
PJ Leash, the bug guy, he heads the entomology department at UW-Madison, and we are talking ticks.
When a deer tick transmits Lyme disease, it takes 36 hours, so about a day and a half. And that's why, in my mind, one of the single best things you can do as a precaution is to do regular tick checks. Because you've removed it, your risk goes down greatly to basically zilch.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
The Maggie Dawn Show is enjoying today's celebration, but it's still Free Ticket Friday and your chance to win a four-pack of Brewers tickets. Right now, use your Civic Media app to text in the word FREEDOM. Now enjoy some of the best moments from the Maggie Dawn Show.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people, this is the Maggie Dawn Show.
We as Republicans, as Democrats, as independents, as liberals and conservatives,
get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
If it was bad before today, I cannot believe how much worse it has gotten.
If we don't band together and protest, our democracy will be gone.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
And I'm freaked the frickin' frack out.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth, here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Do you know that 17 veterans per day take their own lives? That breaks out to one every 85 minutes. That's 6,000 men and women who have served our country that die every year from suicide. In fact, 1,315 of these souls took their lives in the Midwest alone last year, 109 from Wisconsin. My next guest has dedicated his life to preventing these deaths. His name is Lonnie Rethaber. He is the executive director of Patriot Canines of Wisconsin. We're here to talk about the efforts of Lonnie and his amazing group and the amazing dogs that are paired with veterans. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show, Lonnie. I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Maggie. I appreciate being here today.
So let's start at the beginning, or sort of the most basic. Why are canine companions so incredibly effective at helping veterans that are struggling with mental health and other issues like PTSD?
I think my personal opinion, there's a lot of scientific data that goes across this, but my personal opinion is dogs have been with us for 20 to 40,000 years. And it's scientifically proven that in the dog's DNA, that dogs know how to recognize facial expressions. They know how we act and feel. It's the closest animal to us besides the cat. You know, and I think that's why. I think we just have this relationship that goes back to our beginning, as humans.
So, Lonnie, I wanted to ask you about this because I have this discussion with my friends that swear by cats, and I don't have anything against cats. But cats don't work as well for this purpose as well as dogs do. There's something particularly unique about the canine-human bond. So can you talk to us a little bit more about that? What are the things that dogs can be trained to identify when it comes specifically to these mental health, anxiety, PTSD, depression, night terrors, those kinds of things? What is it about dogs that makes them so much better able at identifying humans, frankly, in some crisis?
So the core thing that we teach here is our dogs are alert to cortisol. Cortisol is what the hormone that we give off when we have the fight or flight, or our sympathetic nervous system is engaged, which is the fight, flight, or freeze. And that's what most veterans suffering from PTS are dealing with daily. That cortisol is just constantly being dumped into their system, and they're always either in fight or flight. And that's the biggest thing. And our dogs are taught how to smell that, alert the veteran to that issue. And then they're taught to do deep pressure therapy, which is a tactile stimulation that gives pressure to the veteran that engages our parasympathetic nervous system, which is kind of, if you look at the sympathetic as our gas pedal, the parasympathetic is kind of our brake pedal. And that's the core of our program, is what our dogs do. But I think all dogs, for the most part, know how to do this. I think us as humans don't allow the dog to do its job most of the time. I always talk about when people come home from work and they're a little hungry, a little hangry maybe, and they come home, what's the first thing that happens? A lot of times, you know, that dog's jumping on you and wanting to get it, show some love. And a lot of times we kick the dog out or say, I got to make supper first or something like that. If we just take 5 minutes and just love on that dog, I think our nights would be a lot better.
Well, Lonnie, I'm going to now use you as an excuse for spending even more time with my little dog, Finny, when I get home from work every day. I was reading up about Patriot Canines. You are based out of Wausau, but you serve veterans across a broad geographic area. I wanted to ask you, what does it mean when you write that dogs can do deep pressure therapy to activate the parasympathetic portion of our nervous system?
So deep pressure therapy is more of a tactile stimulation. People with autism using weighted blankets or weighted purses, weighted backpacks. It's proven, you know, I guess the best way to analogy is you swaddle a baby, you wrap a baby in a blanket really tight, and it helps the baby calm down and that works for us too. What's the scientific terminology? I couldn't give it to you because I have somebody that teaches that here that's qualified to answer that question a little bit better than I am. But that's the basically how it works. And every person likes deep pressure therapy a different way. We teach dogs to lay on people's chests. People can lay down, cross their lap, cross their feet. Some of our dogs are big enough where the weight of the dog's head on the lap helps. Mm. Me personally, I like to, when the dogs, when I'm standing and giving talks and things like that, both of my dogs are taught to post, which is dog is in between my legs and I can kind of squeeze the dog. And we also teach the 5-4-3-2-1 method, which is using our senses with the dog. So the first thing I always feel when I have the dog between my legs is the dog's heat and the dog's breathing, and I can even feel the dog's heartbeat sometimes. So it really takes what's going on in my head, and I focus it on my dog. And that takes practice, and we practice that with our veterans for almost 6 months. I always tell everybody, we're kind of rewiring your brain. Doesn't just happen overnight. You got to learn how to do some of these things, just like any type of therapy.
Folks, that's Lonnie Ruthauber. He is the executive director of Patriot Canines of Wisconsin, a nonprofit organization based in Wausau, serves vets throughout the region that trains psychiatric service dogs and pairs them with vets who are impacted by military-related post-traumatic stress, have suffered a TBI or a traumatic brain injury, or those who have experienced military-based sexual trauma. What's different about Patriot Canines? There are a number of organizations that do pair service dogs with vets. What sets apart your organization, Lonnie?
So we use the community model of training service dogs versus the national model. And that's something that the industry is trying to go away from, coining two different types. But that's basically what we do. I always call us a little bit of a hybrid, because we do train the dogs for almost a year prior to them being matched with a veteran. But then we train and finish the dog off over a 6 month period. So a veteran has to commit to our program for 6 months versus some of the other organizations. You may get paired with a dog, spend a weekend with them training. Some of them are up to 2 weeks. That's more the national model. The dog is completely finished, and they teach the veteran how to handle the dog over a short period of time, and they go home with the dog. We're spending 6 months with that veteran and that dog together. I always tell the veterans, I'm inducting you into the canine lifestyle, because mm-hmm. that's what it is. Everywhere you go, it's like having a baby. You know, everywhere you go, you got to plan with taking your dog with you, because you need that dog to be with you as a service dog, and you need to plan for that. So that's the difference.
It is. You're thinking about both of you together all of the time. And that takes a lifestyle adjustment that I think people do need some time to grow into. Lonnie, your story about how you got involved with Patriot Canines is quite touching and unique. Could you share with our listeners a bit about how you got involved in this organization?
Sure. Well, I ran a local trucking company. I was the operations manager. It was veteran-owned, veteran-operated. I'm a veteran as well. And every year we did a campaign for Christmas for a local nonprofit that serves veterans. And in 2018, we picked Patriot Canines. I didn't start this organization. A lady named Sarah Tewitt did. She started it and got us off the floor, so to speak, which took a lot of work. We had Sarah come and speak at our Christmas party, and I kind of fell in love with the organization. I have trained dogs for a long time. I'm in the sport of Shih Tzu or IGP, IPO. It's been many different names over the years. It's basically competition. I guess I hate using the word police dog, but it's kind of similar to police dog work. I've been doing that for almost 20 years now. And I asked Sarah, I was like, hey, I want to volunteer. And I don't think she thought it was serious, because I think a lot of people say I want to volunteer and they really never really do. So about a couple of weeks went by and she never got back to me. So I called her up. I'm like, hey, I want to volunteer. So I started volunteering and helped get us into the building we're currently in and things like that. And up until that point, everybody was 100% non-volunteer. And I was here at lunch one week with Sarah doing something, and she goes, I really need to hire somebody because this is getting bigger than I can handle part-time. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'll do it. And long story short, I gave up 22 years in the trucking industry and came here. And after a while, Sarah left due to medical reasons, and I took over the executive director role. I started here as a program development manager, though. That was my title when I started here.
Wow, that is Lonnie Runthaber. He's been the ED at Patriot Canines of Wisconsin since 2021. How many vets has your organization paired with a canine companion over the lifetime of the organization?
107 graduates to date, and we have another 15 that are scheduled to graduate by August, and we're starting another class this year of 5 that will probably graduate in January of 2026.
107.
Doesn't sound like a lot, but you know, with 18 months to 2 years of training per dog, that's a lot.
I was just going to say, how long does it take for each dog? Because that's the amount of skill and training time and hours with each of these animals. And then, frankly, training the vet that's going to be the owner of the animal on how to handle the animal to build that relationship. You said 18 months. Do you have any idea what the total number of like training hours it is?
The veteran themselves with the dog have to have 300 training hours just themselves. And wow. I imagine the dog are with a trainer nonstop. We have our prison program at Red Granite Correctional Institute. Those trainers there are with the dogs 24/7. So it's thousands of hours per dog.
Thousands of hours per dog. I want to ask you a little bit more about that training program at Red Granite, because in my view of this, Lonnie, you're doing such good both on the initial training end, working with those incarcerated persons, and on the back end with the veterans, because dogs bring goodness wherever they are to whomever is interacting with them. Folks, our special guests, in celebration, in acknowledgement, and in deep reverential respect for our vets and our military, our special guest for Memorial Day is Lonnie Runthaber. He is the executive director of Patriot Canines of Wisconsin. As Lonnie just told each and every one of you, they have 107 dogs that have gone through their program and been placed with veterans, 15 in the training program today. To put that in context, folks, helping each and every one of those vets, hopefully we can take the number of vet suicides, which was 109 in 2021, down to 0. Every dog coming out of Lonnie's program is one small canine paw print step in the right direction in that regard. We're going to take care of a little bit of business. We're going to be right back here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. Happy Memorial Day. Stay with us. We'll be back with Lonnie and more discussion of Patriot Canines after these brief messages.
News from the Center, WRCE. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Years ago, I had some, I think I had a rainbow. No, it was a shirt. It was given to me, and I wore it because I support all people. And a friend of mine, like, you sure you want to walk around in that? You know, a t-shirt, people might think. I'm like, people might think I'm a human being that supports other human beings. I wear sports jerseys sometimes. No one ever says, are you worried people are going to think you're on the Cubs?
I don't think anyone would think that, though.
Oh, you haven't seen my curveball.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Madam Mayor, Satya Rhodes Conway from the fabulous city of Madison.
A lot of people say, I don't like politics. It's all dirty and angry and blah, blah, blah. It's really about caring about your community, finding a way to, like, bring it back to people talking to each other.
Yeah.
About what is important in our place and how do we take care of each other and use the levers of government to do that. That's really what it's about.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
Small businesses are the heart of America. As the nation's largest nonprofit resource of expert business mentoring, SCORE has helped millions of entrepreneurs build their businesses for free. Find a mentor today at score.org.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Your local Civic Media radio station is your source for real news and great conversation, plus fun and exciting contests. For a complete list of contest rules, log on wrce.fm/contest-terms. As Wisconsin is brats on the grill for a tailgate, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
The Maggie Dawn Show is enjoying today's celebration, but it's still Free Ticket Friday and your chance to win a four-pack of Brewers tickets. Right now, use your Civic Media app to text in the word freedom. Now enjoy some of the best moments from the Maggie Dawn Show.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. As part of our celebration of Memorial Day, our acknowledgement, our public expression of respect for all of our current service members and those that have served our vets, we've got a special guest joining us. His name is Lonnie Renthaber. He is the executive director of Patriot Canines of Wisconsin. Patriot Canines of Wisconsin, as we've been discussing, is unique and different for a couple of reasons. One, in their training model for the dogs, it's an extensive training program. They don't just hand over dogs to vets and say, see you later. They do a lot of time with the vet and the canine companion, making sure that the vet has a bond, knows how to work with the animal well. Secondly, the dogs are entirely free to vets, which I think is really important. Lonnie, I wanted to we're going to get to how vets can learn more and sign up, but let me just drop the website here because vets can go there and find out if you want to volunteer, donate money. Here's where you go to find out more about Patriot Canines of Wisconsin, www.patriotcanines, K as in the letter K, 9 as in the number 9, S, patriotcanines.org. We'll put that website address in our show notes. You can find those on Spotify, Apple Pods, and of course at civicmedia.us/shows. One of the other interesting pieces of your program, of your organization, Lonnie, is that men who are incarcerated at the Red Granite Correctional Institution actually help with that initial training. Tell us a little bit more about it.
Yeah, we have our Pause for Patriots. That's what we call it. There's the Pause for Patriots program. And it's a program where we have incarcerated persons training, raising and training our service dog candidates. So we purchase or are donated quality bred service dog candidates from 8 to 12 weeks of age, and we place them at Red Granite, and they are raised and trained by two inmates or two persons, incarcerated persons with each dog. They live with them, they go to work with them, they go to school with them, they do all the stuff that they do every day with people, instead of being a kennel dog that some organizations have dogs just in a kennel until it gets worked. Our dogs are with people all the time. They go to eat with them and everything. So it's really, really nice. We have some of the guys that have been with our program for coming on 4 years now and have raised three dogs, and they're becoming super trainers themselves. Mm. And these are quality trainers that I would hire on the outside if that would ever be an option at some point someday. Really good trainers they're developing there.
Isn't that amazing that at every stage in these dogs' lives, they are impacting, showing love. I always like to say dogs train us as much as we train them in all kinds of ways. Folks, if you're just joining us, our special guest is Lonnie Renthaber, the executive director of Patriot Canines of Wisconsin. Lonnie, let's talk a little bit about how vets can get signed up if they are struggling, if they need some help. Tell us, how does a vet qualify for your program? How do they reach out? What's the process like?
A lot of our veterans come from being from the VA. The VA sends them to us. We get a lot of phone calls initially. However, you can get more information off our website, patriotcanines.org. There's an information tab there. We don't have an application process on the website because it's very extensive. We do background checks. We do a full application, interview, doctor's letters. We need a coal handler. There's a lot of qualifications, so it's way too much to put on the website. But if you can, a veteran in need can go there and fill out the little questionnaire, and it will come to our. We have a veteran coordinator and a veteran liaison. They both get that email, and one of those people will reach out to you within 24 hours of us receiving that email.
Folks, again, you can check that out, fill out that form, do that first outreach so that folks can get in touch with you if you feel like you would benefit from this program. Again, that website is patriotcanines.org. Lonnie, I just wanted to ask you, how has this program impacted some of the veterans who have been paired with canine companions? What are some of the stories, the results, the impacts that people have shared with you over your time as the executive director?
We've had veterans that were homebound, could never really leave their house much more, just to go across the street maybe to go to a quick trip or something like that, go back to school, get married. We've had veterans get not just their bachelor's degree, but master's degrees and cross the stage with their dogs. We've had veterans get married, rekindle. I think the most important thing is they rekindle their relationships with their families, because a lot of us veterans come home and kind of burn a lot of bridges. And I think just getting their family support back is one of the biggest things, is empowering them to remake those connections. And I think one of the things I learned from this program is how much the community actually cares about us, because I wish I would have known it 15 years ago, how much the community supports veterans. It's like, it's unbelievable to me. It's really humbled me over the last few years being here.
I think it's one of the people sometimes don't know how to support vets, but I think it's a universally held feeling that, hey, I of course want to be thankful, respectful, and acknowledge and support veterans in my family and in my community and in my workplace. Folks, if you are asking yourselves, how do I help? Lonnie has an answer for you, and that is Patriot Canines of Wisconsin. They've had our back. Help them know that we have their back through a canine companion. Again, you can check out more and get more information. Donate your time, volunteer, donate some shekels if you got extra. Get involved. If you're a vet suffering, please do reach out. That's www.patriotcanines.org. Lonnie, thank you for your service. Thank you for your continued service to our veterans community here in Wisconsin and beyond. You are seen and appreciated. Folks, that's going to do it for Lonnie and I. I'll be back after the bottom of the half hour with more special acknowledgement of Memorial Day. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic News.
This is News from the Center, WRCE. Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packard. More than 40 people killed, including children, after catastrophic and deadly flash flooding in central Texas. Many of them camping near the Guadalupe River when the flash flood came. A disaster declaration expanding in the state. The number of missing still unclear.
Those still missing include over two dozen young girls from Camp Mystic. The beds in the cabins completely upended. This area got more than a foot of rain in a matter of hours, swelling the Guadalupe River, sending floodwaters streaming into neighborhoods and communities, overwhelming campgrounds.
ABC's Maria Villarreal. Iran Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei today made his first public appearance since the 12-day war between Israel and Iran began. The 86-year-old had spent the war in a bunker as threats to his life escalated. Bags of garbage piling up in Philadelphia. City workers demanding higher wages continue their days-old strike over this holiday weekend. This is ABC News.
The Brewers in Miami. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers and the Marlins going at it this afternoon in South Florida, where it's hot, humid, and in the 90s. Last night, the Brewers held on to beat the Marlins 6-5, thanks to closer Trevor McGill getting his 19th save of the season. Pat Murphy asked, why did he decide to keep McGill in the game despite two men on and the Marlins slugger Otto Lopez at the plate?
I know I'm looking at the clock, and what time was it? I looked at the clock, and it was like 9:48, and I'm like, Milwaukee's an hour behind, and when my kid's going to go to bed, so I got to be able to FaceTime to go to bed. So that was one thing I was thinking. The other thing I was thinking of just how proud I am of McGill. Just every big situation, he's just a great competitor, you know, and keeps coming at you. Close call, whatever, it doesn't affect him. It's just, he's been sensational. That's what I was thinking about. When my kids are going to go to sleep so I can FaceTime them, and then that. What else was I thinking about? Like all the things I was thinking about? I mean, I had a lot of things on my mind.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy with Sports on Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Big Brother Season 27 is about to drop, but there is an exciting new twist, according to the people who created said twist. Variety says three contestants from previous seasons will drop by every Friday night to analyze the sitch. Other highlights for this coming season will include a mystery hotel theme and a living room with chess guardians, whatever that means. Season 27 of Big Brother drops July 10th on CBS. In other Season 27 news, the creators of South Park are not happy about the delay in their latest season reaching viewers. Trey Parker and Matt Stone are blaming the Paramount merger with Skydance for the long wait between seasons. Season 26 finished 2 years ago. A recent update was that the new season would drop July 9, but that has been pushed back again to July 27. Just guessing, we will see Parker and Stone's frustration with the networks in a South Park episode in the near future. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight with scattered showers and thunderstorms and lows in the upper 60s. Mostly sunny for tomorrow. Beautiful. Less humid and a high in the low 80s. More sunshine for Monday, then a little more humidity Monday night and Tuesday with some storms possible. Right now it's 73.
I'm Tony Goldwyn. As an actor and a director, I attend a lot of screenings, but there's one that's different. It's important, and it could save your life. A lung cancer screening. You know, I lost my mom to lung cancer when she was just 68 years old. Screenings help diagnose lung cancer early when it's most treatable, even curable. A quick low-dose CT scan is all it takes. GoTo for lung cancer is your go-to. Visit goto.org.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Why do we want to be proud to be an American? Why are we celebrating the United States?
Let's say that you're going to define America in political terms. I define it in terms of what the Founding Fathers did in 1776. An ideal that we're still trying to fully live up to. That all men, all people, I would say, are created equal. All Americans are represented by the stars and stripes. I love the 4th of July.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station. And on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
The Maggie Dawn Show is enjoying today's celebration, but it's still Free Ticket Friday and your chance to win a four-pack of Brewers tickets. Right now, use your Civic Media app to text in the word FREEDOM. Now enjoy some of the best moments from the Maggie Dawn Show.
Welcome, 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 and welcome back if you're rejoining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Every Wednesday at 4:30, we do a segment that we call Broad Appeal because I like to talk to all of the amazing broads, and I mean that with reverential love and respect, that are involved in politics, standing up for the middle class here in the state of Wisconsin. We've got one such fabulous broad. It is Madam Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway of the city of Madison. Welcome to the program. So glad that you could make time for us.
Well, thank you so much, Maggie. Really appreciate the time to be here, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's great. It's great to see you. Since we were just talking about the biennial budget with my colleague Dan Schaefer, I thought I would start there, see if you have any thoughts. I mean, My view is, and what I understand from folks in joint finance, is that where the governor has gotten at least Robin Voss and most Republicans in state government, the place that they're at in those negotiations is better than the budget that we've got now, which would potentially make a veto of the budget problematic, right? And we've got sort of these fringy MAGA state senators that want about the most draconian cuts and more tax cuts for the ultra wealthy and mega businesses here in the state. All kind of nonsensical. And the big sort of 8,000 pound gorilla in the room, of course, is that none of the MAGA regime here in the state are talking about the impacts to Wisconsinites by Donald Trump's big brutal bill on Capitol Hill. So my question to you, Mayor, is generally, what are your reflections on this moment and the upcoming biennial budget? And what do cities like yours, as well as smaller municipalities, what is your view? What are the potential impacts for our local jurisdictions, our munis across the state?
Yeah, it's a great question and certainly a huge issue for our state right now. I mean, I guess I'd start with a couple of just really top line things. And I mean, first of all, to give credit where credit's due, the budget that the governor proposed was a really good budget.
Yes, it was.
Right. And, you know, I would have been happy with that. But of course, that's not how things go in the state legislature. But, you know, we at the local level, we don't really have the option to delay and disagree and, you know, threaten to like not even have a budget at all.
Yeah.
We have to balance our budget every year and we're required to pass it by a certain time. And like, so, you know, at the local level, I think we're, dare I say, slightly more practical about these things. And I really do think that, you know, we don't get as caught up in the sort of partisan or ideological fussing that the state legislature can get caught up in sometimes. But I think, you know, all told, you raise a really good point. We do not know the full scope of the impacts of what the federal government is doing for the state. And when we at the city level look at the potential scope of impact of reduced funding from the federal government, it's very large, and we would not be able to make up all those services on our own, and we would certainly need help from the state. And And I think it would really be prudent right now for state government to be thinking about what are those impacts, not just across their own agencies, which is large enough.
Right.
But also what are the impacts across of all local government who has a much reduced capacity to take care of our folks if we're not getting federal funding. So that is a huge deal.
Yes.
That I don't see them talking about. The other thing I would say is that, you know, over the past decade-ish, you know, one thing that has happened is that the state has taken a series of actions that has pushed costs off onto the property tax. So what I am saying to you is that the state legislature has forced higher property taxes.
Yes.
On people who live in Wisconsin. And that's unfair. We should have a balance in types of revenue between the property tax and income tax and sales tax and fees and fines. And that right now is not happening. So when I look at the budget and the budget deal that is sort of in the mix right now, I look to see, are they doing anything for municipalities?
Yeah.
Are they doing anything to give us some actual tax relief in the form of property tax relief by giving some of that revenue that they make in income tax and sales tax off of our communities back to the people that generate it?
Yes.
That's what I look for in the budget. And you know, so far, I don't see a whole lot.
Yeah, my brain is going in a million directions based upon what you just said. Having been through budget cycles at the city of Milwaukee years ago and nearly 8 years with Milwaukee County, I know I've seen that work up close because much of the services provided in local government, this isn't about partisanship, right?
We serve everybody.
Yes, schools and parks and your local roads and the garbage pickup and the snow removal and the libraries. Like this, it is, I often tell people that local governments are the resource of last resort.
Yes.
And they're the resource of first impact, meaning the stuff that immediately impacts your life, that's local government. Like that is the touch point for the vast majority of us in terms of immediate impacts on our quality of life. And thank you so much for pointing out that, quote, shared revenue, that is this bizarro formula that the state arbitrarily cooks up every year to determine how much of a locality's revenues that are generated from a place like Madison or Wausau or Wisconsin Dells or Sturgeon Bay, how much of their own taxes that they create through their residents and taxpayers goes back to those localities. The state has increasingly created mandates and not funded them.
Yeah.
And the shared revenue formula is so broken. And you compound that and you can go, everybody can go to the Wisconsin Policy Forum website and look at their analyses of how screwed up our revenue system is, our taxation, fees, and fine structures. Most other states in the union allow local governments so much greater flexibility when it comes to revenue generation.
Right. We're so limited in how we can generate revenue. And but you said a really important thing, and that is the amount that comes back to our communities. And so for Madison alone, right, we get back of the money we send to the state government, right? So of the income tax that our folks pay, of the sales tax that when you go and you buy something in the store, you pay that sales tax, right? We get back 18 cents on the dollar. And that's not city government. That is the community of Madison.
Right.
That is the city and the county and the school district. So we are subsidizing the state government. Now, I don't mind giving them some, like, I don't mind, right? We need a state government. I like having state agencies do the work that they do. I'm really glad we have a housing authority. Like, I like WEDA. I like the DNR, But we are generating economic activity for the state. We are growing in population, and we need a little bit more than 18 cents on the dollar back.
And that, Madam Mayor, to me, this is the great looming specter over all of this, whether we're looking in the Beltway, you know, in Washington, D.C., and the big brutal belt, or we're looking here at our biennial budget, is a fundamental concept of fairness. right? Yeah. And the distortion that is employed by some to twist facts, 18 cents on the dollar for the whole metropolitan area of Madison is unfair. I think everybody can see that. It's worse when you look at the Milwaukee metropolitan area by a clip. I mean, Madison, Milwaukee, the big tourism centers in our state, the places where there are large manufacturers, these are the economic engines. And we have to, again, the local governments provide the infrastructure and the support and the resources for their residents that drive that economic activity that funds state government. We can do better. We need to do better. I wanted to talk, you mentioned housing, Madam Mayor, and you have championed Madison's housing first approach to combat homelessness. We know that stable housing and addressing housing insecurity unlocks all kinds of opportunities for people.
Yes, it does.
If you want to tell people to bootstrap themselves, well, that gets highly more likely if you've got a place to live. Tell us a little bit more about what you're doing in Madison.
You need a roof over your head. I mean, this is the thing. So listen, Madison, like many cities around the country, has, you know, for years and years and years, did not build enough homes to keep up with our population growth. And that puts you in a situation where, first of all, the competition for the existing homes is driving up the price. And the people who are suffering the most are the people who have the least. And so you're increasing, if you do not have a healthy housing market, you're increasing housing instability, you're increasing the risk of homelessness and actual homelessness, because people literally can't afford a place to live, right? They can't afford a home. Yeah. And so we're taking an across-the-board approach in Madison. And so yes, absolutely, we're doing work on homelessness, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But we are trying to catch up on the years and years where we weren't building enough homes. We are trying to catch up and build more homes. So we have a pretty ambitious goal of building about 15,000 homes by 2035. And part of that is so that we can create enough homes that are affordable for folks to get them into housing and out of homelessness. And that, it's a challenge. It's a big project, but we are using all sorts of different tools to make sure that we can just get more homes built for everybody.
Yeah, you know, so when supply is artificially low and we haven't planned, right, prices go up. That is the old Econ 101.
That's right.
I went to law school at Madison, loved it. I was recently in town chatting with some friends of mine and literally almost fell off my bar stool at Paul's Club when they told me how much they were paying in mortgage payments for the size of their home and another friend paying in rent. And, you know, you talk to folks in Green Bay, that's an issue. You talk to folks in Wisconsin Dells, that's an issue.
Yeah.
And the federal government has almost all but disappeared, right? There's money still coming from HUD, but actual new housing starts, it ain't coming from the – it wasn't before, and it certainly ain't happening in this administration. It's a real crisis. Tell me about some of the different resources that you're pulling together. And we've got about a minute.
Yeah, so we're working on zoning to make we're working to make it easier to build things by right, so you can just get a building permit, and we're working on funding housing, and then we're working on improving our process so it is quicker to make housing in our community.
Zoning, get the permit, make it quicker, and get the funding, and you'll have some housing starts. We're going to continue this discussion with Madison Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway in today's installment of Broad Appeal. What got her into politics? What keeps her in the fight? What feeds her energy? Because we all need it these days. We discuss next right here on The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
as Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Matt and Air on Air.
PJ Leash, the bug guy, he heads the entomology department at UW-Madison, and we are talking ticks.
When a deer tick transmits Lyme disease, it takes 36 hours, so about a day and a half. And that's why, in my mind, one of the single best things you can do as a precaution is to do regular tick checks. Because you've removed it, your risk goes down greatly to basically zilch.
Matt and Air on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
It's National Handshake Day, but I find the idea that you just meet someone and you're holding a body part of theirs kind of odd. Hello, stranger. I'd like to squeeze your hand. Let's have an intimate act here. I have no idea where it's been or how you choose to use your hand in your spare time, but I'd like to hold it for a while. Unless it's a friend. Look, I don't know why we have to touch each other when we barely know each other.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Mommy, can I sit in the front seat just this one time? Please, please, please.
No, not yet.
But why?
Because I love you, and you're just not ready yet. Now, get in the back so I can get you in your car seat, please.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Teachers are diverse, skilled leaders, innovating to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Teaching shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Your local Civic Media radio station is your source for real news and great conversation, plus fun and exciting contests. For a complete list of contest rules, log on wrce.fm/contest-terms. Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
Is getting vaccinated on your to-do list? We can help you check that off.
You've got this.
Yes, you do. See how we've got you at yougotthis.usaging.org. A message from the Aging and Disability Vaccination Collaborative, powered by U.S. Aging.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
The Maggie Dawn Show is enjoying today's celebration, but it's still Free Ticket Friday and your chance to win a four-pack of Brewers tickets. Right now, use your Civic Media app to text in the word freedom. Now enjoy some of the best moments from the Maggie Dawn Show.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. Happy Wednesday afternoon. This is the Civic Media Radio Network, and I am your host, Maggie Dawn. In the 4:30 half hour, every Wednesday, we do a segment called Broad Appeal, where we talk to the amazing women and political leaders across the state of Wisconsin. We've got one such fabulous woman with us this afternoon. Her name is Madam Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway from the fabulous city of Madison. So glad to have you with us. And I like to ask all women, whether they're activists, whether they are folks that owned childcare businesses that have found their way into the political forum, what got you into the political arena? Was this baked into your cake from a young age, or did you find your way to it?
Oh, I definitely found my way. I thought from a young age that I was going to be a botanist or an ecologist. All of my training is in science. So my undergrad and my master's, I didn't get to politics until I had moved to Madison. And then I had sort of two initial things that got me into it. And one was I actually got a job in policy, so working on state level environment policy. And then I had a friend who ran for city council. And, you know, I had no idea, like, there's a city council. What do they do?
I would assume you're in good company with many people.
Many people don't know much about local government. But here's my friend, and she wants to do this thing. And so, of course, I'm going to help her. And so I got involved with her campaign, and I met some people, and I worked on something. We didn't win that race. She didn't win. But then in the next cycle, I ended up running for city council, and I served for 6 years. At the same time, I was working increasingly with cities and mayors on city policy. And so that was how I got into it. I'm a policy wonk.
Yes.
And that's really where I come from, is wanting to make a difference in people's lives through the policies and programs that happen at the local government level.
I love this so much because this is a deep, deep compliment. You don't sound like a politician. And I'm so sick of politicians that sound like politicians. It's like, get off the script. Set the talking points down. You don't need to do that. Speak from the heart, right? I think, you know, and I'm going to talk later in the show about, you know, the huge upset in the New York City mayor's race, right? Like, here's Zohran, Mamdani coming out from way behind in the polls to defeat a family legacy of Dems, Andrew Cuomo. In New York City, one of the things is he sounds like a regular person. Gasp. And Mayor, I wanted to give you the opportunity, you know, and you can take this question in one of two ways. Either speak directly to women and other folks out there who maybe didn't grow up in politics, living and breathing this stuff, and are thinking about dipping their toe into the pond about, you know, taking the plunge, using your voice to help activate change. Speak to folks out there, whether they want to themselves be an elected official or want to get more involved, because I think our power is in the people in this moment.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and it always has been, really. We've just abdicated it. A lot of people say, I don't like politics. I don't do politics. I'm not interested in politics. It's all dirty and angry and blah, blah, blah. Well, politics is interested in you, right? And
I have a four-letter word saying, if you don't F with politics, politics will F with you. So
absolutely,
yes,
right? But if you're not at the table, you're on the menu.
Yes.
Right? So there are so many ways that you can make a difference in your community, and you don't have to think of it as politics, right? So like community work, community building, this is all part of it, right? Yeah. So whether you are doing it through your neighborhood association or your congregation or your friend group or your like whatever nonprofit you're volunteering for, or whether you join a city committee, like I appoint hundreds of people, residents of Madison, to city committees to help us think about stuff, right? To help us do the work that we do, right? Or maybe you do want to run for office, or maybe it's not you that runs for office, or it's your friend that you're going to support them in running for office. And like, there are so many ways to get into it. And it's really about caring about your community and finding a way to make a difference and finding a way to like, bring it back to people talking to each other, right, about what is important in our place, in our community, in our neighborhood, and how do we take care of each other and use the levers of government to do that. That's really what it's about.
It's such an important reminder to us all, because I think as gerrymandering got out of hand, right, and as money in politics has had now a goodly 50 years of corrupting influence in our country dating back to Buckley v. Vallejo in 1976, this is why people feel
we got to take it back.
Correct.
Right? And that's why the local level is so important, because it does touch your daily life every day, and your voice can make a difference at the local level. I have seen votes switched by a handful of people coming to a city council meeting.
100%. Right? And it is, again, I said this previously, local government is often the resource of last resort, but it is also the resource of first impact in your life. I guarantee you, you show up at a few meetings, you get to know your alder persons, your common council members, your mayors,
and
you will have an impact.
And I'll tell you, Maggie, people think that they're not qualified to be in government. Everybody is everybody has lived experience that qualifies them to be in government. So don't let anybody tell you you're not.
You've got the Maggie Dawns and the Satya Rhodes Conways that are the policy wonks to help you bring your values into fruition. Thank you so much, Madam Mayor. It is a real genuine pleasure. Can't wait to do this again. Folks, you're not going to want to go anywhere with the Civic Media Radio Network.
From the center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Dozens of people are dead after heavy rain brought catastrophic flooding to central Texas. Officials say children at a camp near the Guadalupe River were among those killed. Texas Governor Greg Abbott says emergency responders remain in a search and rescue posture hours after the flooding.
They have rescued or recovered more than 850 people.
Chief Nim Kidd, Division of Emergency Management in Texas.
Our hope and prayer is that there are still people alive that are out there, and we are still actively searching for them, and we will continue. And listen, that will turn into recovery at some point, and none of us want to put a time period on that right now.
A wildfire that erupted Wednesday afternoon in St. Louis Obispo County, California, exploded to nearly 80 acres with just 10% containment. Officials in Indianapolis say seven people shot two fatally during July 4th festivities downtown. One of the dead said to be a minor, police chief saying a common factor in the violence, hundreds of unsupervised kids. This is ABC News. Russia is